This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Music, the show that looks at the money behind the music industry with me, Steve Lamack, and Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge. I warn you, Stuart, straight away that the builders are in next door where I've been warned they're knocking out a fireplace in an adjoining wall. So at any point, you could maybe hear some banging or the whole house might collapse, which I guess adds an element of jeopardy, if nothing else, to this week's episode. But it's our news edition for this week, which, I mean, it leans quite heavily this week towards stories surrounding AI. And I know we've covered a few AI-related items recently regarding the potential impact of AI on the music industry. This week, there's a few more, and I know we've only worked together for a few weeks, but this should tell you, Stuart, how my mind works. Because when you were saying, you know, we could go all in on AI, for this episode, it suddenly occurred to me, suddenly struck me, what would AI make of this podcast? So, and I've never used one of those pieces of AI writing software before, but I looked one up and I typed in, I asked it to write an introduction for a podcast about money in the music industry, basically come up with a description of this pod. And this is genuinely what it spilled out. We should play the theme tune again here. honestly, this is word for word what it said. Hello and welcome to The Sound of Wealth, the podcast that delves deep into the intersection of money and music. In an industry as dynamic and diverse as music, understanding the financial landscape is crucial for artists, producers, managers, and fans alike. Join us as we uncover the secrets behind the dollars and cents driving the melodies and rhythms we love. From royalty structures to streaming revenue, touring profits to publishing deals, we'll explore every aspect of the music industry's financial ecosystem. Along the way, we'll hear from industry experts, successful artists, and financial advisors who have navigated the complex pathways of music finance. Whether you're an aspiring musician aiming to turn your passion into profit, a seasoned industry professional looking to stay ahead of the curve, or simply a music enthusiast curious about the business behind the beats, this is the podcast for you. Welcome to The Sound of Wealth. How's that? How is that?
Wow.
I mean, apart from the name, which I'm not keen on, The Sound of Wealth, just because that just creates images of record executives in big LA mansions for me, which I don't think is what we were aiming for. But otherwise, some of those lines are almost exactly what we wrote in the original blurb for this. I mean, never mind musicians being put out of business by AI. I mean, producer Guy is going to be looking over his shoulder after this.
It's lucky he's not. But it's interesting, isn't it? There's bits, little bits, like the bit I picked out there was when it's like, we learn about the dollars and cents that do the rhythms and melodies, like that double mirror thing. That's like proper writing. I know, it's frightening.
Yeah, isn't it? Anyway, stories, lots of stories to get through. There's a Spotify price rise coming. Kiss are following ABBA down the Avatar route. But first, to start this week, more than 200 artists have signed an open letter calling on AI developers, tech companies and digital services to, and I quote, cease the use of artificial intelligence to infringe upon and devalue the rights of human artists. And there's some big names lending their support to this, isn't there?
There are. It's a full spread, really. So you've got kind of pop, sort of modern popular artists like Billie Eilish and Katy Perry and Nicki Minaj and Sam Smith. You've got kind of the heritage artists. You've got Sheryl Crow and Miranda Lambert and John Bon Jovi, Pearl Jam, Stevie Wonder. You've got the estates of Bob Marley and Frank Sinatra. Mm. And the best one, Engelbert Humperdinck, who I'm sure this is the second time I've seen his name on a petition about industry issues. So either he is very engaged with this sort of thing or his manager is. But yeah, it's a name to conjure with. I'm glad it's on there.
Yeah.
They're basically protesting about three things, really. So one is they don't want AI models to be trained on their music without permission. That's kind of something we've been talking about a lot in the industry.
Yeah.
They're worried about deepfakes. So people using AI to create deepfakes and musicians like cloning their voices and making them sing stuff they didn't sing, which has happened to Frank Sinatra's a good example, is quite high profile stuff. So that's why his estate are into this. And then the third thing is this idea of digital services. So they're thinking about anything from TikTok to Spotify, who might be thinking of replacing human music with floods of AI music, which is stuff like, you know, mood music, music make you sleep. So it's kind of the same three talking points, really, that the music industry has been hitting on recently when it talks about AI and what it wants to see happen in terms of new laws.
Mm.
But this is artists saying it rather than kind of industry bodies or labels.
And so, I mean, when you say the AI software is being trained on an artist, how does that work? And what's the fear then at this point that the original artists will find that their music isn't as popular as the as the new tech version of what they've been doing?
Well, that's it. So there's been this big debate. So when you build an AI model, when you build a generative AI model that can create, whether it's music or photos or text or video, you've got to sort of teach it what that stuff is. And the way you teach it is you basically train it by shoving in. This is a technical term, shoving in. So for example, if you were training ChatGPT, the text one, you have to get it to read stuff. You have to kind of stuff text into it from all over the world. For music, you have to train it. You have to say, right, here are 100,000 songs, feed them in. And that's how musical AIs learn about the structure of music. It's how they learn how to make it themselves. In a way, like, I don't know, maybe this is controversial. It's a bit like how children learn language. You know, they hear it and they read books and that's how they learn language. AIs aren't so different from like a toddler in a sense, and it starts with nothing and it has to. So in music, there's been a lot of talk about, well, if these companies are making musical AIs, they must be training them on something. So what are they training them on? Are they just hoovering up the history of recorded music without asking us permission? And if you're a record label, your argument is we need to be asked permission and they need to pay us. It needs to be a licensing deal. In the AI world beyond music, this is, some of the AI companies have argued, no, it's not. It's fair use. Like, it's fine for us to train our stuff on anything we want, books, internet sites, music, video, because we don't have to pay for a license, don't have to ask permission. In the US, it's like this thing called fair use, which is a very specific legal thing in the US. So that's a debate. It's like, if you're an AI company and you want to teach your AI how to make music, do you have to go to labels and say, I'd like to license your catalog to do this, or can you just take it? And so the artists are arguing, we don't want that to happen. We want to be asked permission.
I mean, it's quite confusing in a way, because, I mean, I can see the argument from the artists and the record labels' point of view, but I guess from the AI developers, they're saying, well, all this music is in the public domain. Everyone has access to this already. So what is stopping us to just, we've bought the CD, we've downloaded the track, where, you know, that music is available, so why can't we use it?
It's it. I mean, I saw, it was actually, who we're going to come back to later, Bjorn Ovaeus from ABBA once, I saw him talking about this in an interview. He was very good. He was saying, when I was growing up, I was trained on the Beatles. You know, he listened to the Beatles, the Beach Boys, and that's where... And then he created something that wasn't a copy of those. It was his, you know, ABBA, which is...
Yeah.
So in a way, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting argument, because it's kind of... There's two layers to it, I suppose. There's a legal argument over, do you need a license to do this? And that's being argued about around the world now, and people are putting regulations. And that's why the music industry is talking about it so much, because they want the lawmakers to say, yes, you do need a license to do this, and they are a company. But that's a legal thing. Like, you know, it will either be legal or it won't in different parts of the world. But I think there's a moral thing as well. If you're an AI company just hoovering up all the music without asking anyone's permission, I don't know. I don't really, it's not really saying I want to be a good partner for musicians and the music industry, I don't think. It's kind of saying, we don't care. We'll take all your stuff. And the thing is, you could train an AI on the catalog of Stevie Wonder, and I don't think it would come up with anything that's going to make Stevie Wonder worry about his earnings yet. But still, artists are kind of quite keen.
Is this? Would you say this is the biggest warning shot yet? At least from the musicians, at least I know we've had really press releases and statements from record labels and publishers, but in terms of musicians, this is the, I guess this is the highest profile announcement from the musician side.
Definitely, I think we've heard the individual musicians have talked about it. But, and I think it kind of is important because a lot of this, I mean, the open letter the musicians wrote is targeted at the AI companies saying, don't do this. We don't want you to. But the equal targets are the politicians who are having to decide what rules to kind of set and how to kind of craft regulation. And like it's when the music industry wants politicians to do something, it's good that it speaks with one voice and labels get together in industry bodies and they say, we want this. But the kind of the artists bring that moral clout, I suppose. And if you're a politician, you may not know much about AI, but you like Sheryl Crow, or you like Stevie Wonder, or your teenager likes Billie Eilish, and they're saying, you know, mum, dad, you know, what are you doing about this? Billie Eilish says AI could be used badly. So I think it is a big moment because it's artists having their voice in this debate, not just the companies. And that's going to kind of bolster that case for, yeah. What should we do about this?
That was interesting because that was going to be another of my follow-up questions was do the musicians have any clout? Because in a way, the industry probably has more actual clout, but you're saying that it's the profile of the musicians which makes this important.
I mean, the other thing, and this isn't really part of this story, but the thing I think we should keep an eye on is that there have been a few things in the past year where people who represent musicians, so the Music Managers Forum here in the UK, which is a managers body, and the Ivors Academy, so they've started saying, you know what, it's not just about permission between AI companies and labels. It's about labels, if they want to license music to an AI company, asking the artist permission. Yeah. So there is kind of a thing here where there could be some tension between artists and labels, where artists say, I don't want you to license my music out without asking me. Mm. And the labels are saying, we don't want AI companies to use our music without. So there's two layers here, but this open letter is very much the artists backing what the labels are saying and you know, leaving those tensions aside for the moment and just saying, but these are the rules we want to have in place.
I must try and find this out because I don't know whether this is already happening. You might know, but is AI covered in any record contracts? Because I imagine from here on in, managers are going to be trying to insert clauses in record company contracts and publishing contracts which prohibit that sort of behavior, having their music licensed to AI companies without an artist's permission.
I think that's exactly what's happening from what I've heard. Like there was a thing last year, there was like it wasn't a contractual thing. It was like a little sort of form. The MMF said, if you're an artist, send this to your label, say, you don't have my permission unless I give it. And there'll probably be arguments over what is the existing wording in contracts that might cover this, that doesn't refer to AI specifically.
Right.
And but I think that is something like if you're signing a new contract now, it'd be surprising if this wasn't part of it of saying what. But then the problem is like with AI, I mean, in a way, like a lot of contracts signed like 20 years ago didn't include streaming because streaming wasn't a thing. Like with AI, it's hard to know what's going to be done with it in 5-10 years time. So in a way, it's difficult for contracts to cover every eventuality. But yeah, I think it's going to be a big not a problem, but a big discussion point for contracts.
Here's another AI story, which, this one is possibly of interest more to fans than artists. Spotify has launched AI playlists in the UK, which initially I thought that meant playlists of AI assisted songs, but it's not. It's a new way of twisting the algorithm, as Sean Ryder might have said. What is an AI playlist exactly? You know more about this than I do. What does it offer listeners?
Yeah, well, it comes back to your intro actually to the show. Like, so it's in a way it's turning Spotify into a box where you chat to an AI and say, I want a playlist on this. So some of the examples are like, find me some relaxing music to work to, or help me explore glitch hop, or I want a 1-hour drum and bass playlist for the gym. Like, it's a way of, instead of having a search box where you sort of type in rock music, or instead of just having that screen that's got full of playlists you can choose from, this is kind of a conversational way of saying, right, I'm doing this, or I feel this way, or I want this. And apparently you can reference, I've got a list here, places, animals, activities, movie characters, colors, and emojis. So these are the things you can use in your prompt to sort of say, and it will create a playlist for you. So it's a way of creating getting Spotify to create you a super specific playlist for what you're doing at the moment or what you're feeling like.
You see, I was rather hoping there'd be more specific than that, you could actually type in, you know, grumpy Monday morning or something.
You could.
It would come up. Can you actually, you know, music for a half marathon. Or for our friends who I know listen, a playlist for the running punks. But you can, it's as broad as
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, and basically mixing genres and decades and that thing is quite good. So yeah, and activities. So I want a punk running playlist is the perfect thing for this. And it's not that brand new. Like in a way, people who've got smart speakers and are used to saying, Alexa, play me some relaxing music. Like it's kind of a similar sort of space to that, but... And it's weird because I think people, and you can't ask for offensive stuff. So you couldn't ask it for Nazi anthems. You couldn't ask it for stuff that, you know, like they've put safeguards in and there are certain terms that it says, I can't help you with that. Sorry. But yeah, I think it's kind of like this more like some people will be like, I don't want AI playlists. You know, people may not fancy it, but I was doing it this morning. I think it could be really good for like exploring music. So this morning I was trying it out and I was going, can you make me like a beginner's guide to Detroit techno? And it took me out 30 tracks. Or you could ask it for like some of the deepest disco cuts that weren't hits. Or like you could use it as a way into genres you don't know much about. Like I feel like it could be fun for people who like that sort of, almost like a way of crate digging on Spotify without kind of having to go and find all the songs yourself. But well, it's one of those things where a lot of people would try it because they'll be curious. And if it gives you something good, you might do it again. If it gives you something rubbish, you probably won't. So a lot will depend on that first playlist it serves up to people, you know. Yeah.
What about music for the man with the drill next door? Can we do that? Oh, here's another one. What if you typed in music for a streaming service which is about to raise its prices? I wonder what we'd get then. Because while we're talking about Spotify, I noticed this last week, and I'm not sure how close we are to this, but it seems Spotify are planning to increase the subscription cost again.
Yeah, so it wasn't an official announcement yet, but it was a story on Bloomberg, like the business news site, and they tend to be, when they write something's going to happen, they tend to be have good sources. And it said, yeah, so Spotify's going to increase its prices in a few countries, including the UK. And it said an extra dollar, so I think that means a quid here, because like $1 equals quid for Spotify pricing for individual subscriptions, and then £2 on a family plan, which by my reckoning would mean Spotify costs £11.99 for a person, and £19.99 for a family. That's gone up quite a lot in the last couple of years. But there's kind of a but to this. Like, this is if you want to have audiobooks as part of your subscription, which is kind of a new thing they launched recently. And the report said there'd be a new basic tier without audiobooks that won't have the price increase. But I think what you might have to do is go in and say, I don't want audiobooks, change me over to that basic one.
Right. And will this mean there's more money to pay out to artists? What is this... What is the rise in price? Why is it coming? I know the music industry were quite keen, weren't they? Some people were saying, well, put your prices up. Even one of our listeners, I think, said, if they put the prices up, can't they pay musicians more? Mm-hmm. Or is this money going to, you know, basically run Spotify? Because as the service gets progressively bigger, you know, on an almost daily basis, presumably their own costs are going up.
Yeah, I mean... So it's a hard question in a way, because in theory, if you add a quid to the price of Spotify, about 63p of that goes into the royalties pool and about 37p goes to Spotify. So in that sense, there's no change. There shouldn't be any change there. So it should mean, yeah, another, you know, if there's a million subscribers paying a quid more, that means 630,000 quid extra for the royalties, so that's good. What I don't know is this idea of the audiobooks being part of the high one and low one. I don't know how that will affect it. I don't know if the music share of the higher price subscriptions is different because there's audiobooks included. So there's kind of, but yeah, in theory it's good as well, because Spotify putting its prices up, that kind of opens a door for its rivals to do that too. And that's what's happened in the past, like one service goes and then the rest go, well, we'll do it too. Like there's less advantage in saying, well, we'll keep our prices low, than there is in saying, actually, if they do it and no one really complains, we can do it too. So it could trigger another wave of all the services adding a quid on. And from artist's point of view, I think that is a good thing. It's what the music industry has been asking for.
might also be good news for artists who are in the twilight of their careers. You know, in the last episode, our listeners' questions show, we had a question about whether musicians have pensions or how do they future-proof themselves for retirement. And you mentioned as one example of an act who've worked out a way of making money without having to even tour, the ABBA model, as we're now calling it, where they've been turned into avatars performing live in East London every night. Now it transpires there are plans for the glam rock band Kiss to follow in ABBA's footsteps.
Yeah, so this is like this is all about a company called Pop House, who in Sweden, which was actually co-founded by Björn from ABBA a few years ago, and they were like ABBA's partners for ABBA. Is it ABBA Voyage? It is, isn't it? It's not Voyage. I want to say Voyage, but it's not. It's Voyage. Do you know what I mean? It should be ABBA Voyage.
How cosmopolitan of you,
I know.
Voyage. Stick with Voyage. Come on.
Yeah. So Pop House were their partner for that. And then it was already working with Kiss on this idea of a Kiss avatar show. And they actually trailed it at the end of, I think it was it Madison Square Garden? It was one of the US gigs on Kiss's last tour. And the last song was like the Kiss avatars being unveiled. So that's now going to happen in 2027, because it takes a long time to put together this sort of thing. But yeah, the company has now paid reportedly more than $300 million, which is for Kiss's music catalogs, but also other rights like their brand name and image likenesses and stuff. So it's part like buying a catalog, like we've seen with like Bruce Springsteen and such like, but it's also then we're going to be and doing a biopic as well of Kiss. I think that's part of this. So they're going to be doing a bunch of stuff that will. So I'm sort of torn. I've got two things about this. One is I'm not so sure. And one is like, I think it'd be amazing. So the thing I'm not so sure about is like, well, how long were ABBA away for before they came back with the Avatar show? Was it 40 years? 36 years, like they haven't been around at all. You couldn't go and see them live at all. But like Kiss have been doing farewell tours since 2000. Like I think that was their first farewell tour. So like I do wonder if there was a pent-up demand to go and see it, some kind of ABBA live thing. But everyone who wants to see Kiss has probably seen two or three farewell concerts. So that's a bit like, I wonder if it's like ABBA did really well, will Kiss? I'm not sure. But then I was thinking, you know how pyro is Kiss's thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like monster pyro. Well, imagine the pyro if the band is virtual. They could set themselves on fire, you know, and there's no health and safety. They could do all kinds of stuff with the band members that they can't do now. So it could be a spectacular experience.
You know, I just like the fact that the avatar model is currently restricted to bands who only have four letters in their name. Just ABBA, Kiss. So next it will be Blur, Pulp, Rush. AC/DC would count, wouldn't it? That's four that letters. AC/DC would be amazing. Actually, AC/DC is probably a better idea than Kiss, because there's demand for AC/DC to tour the world virtually.
I think that's it. And that's the thing. It's like, does it suit the band? Is there demand? Are there problems stopping the band from touring? Like AC/DC, the singer's got hearing issues, hasn't he, that stopped him touring for a while. I mean, the other thing, have you been to ABBA Voyage? Have you seen it?
No, I've not. I do know people who have been, and they do say it is, you know, they say it's amazing. And these are people that I trust, you know. So, it's supposed to be. Have you been?
Yeah, I went. I think, like, the avatars are impressive, but in a way, the two best things about it are humans, weirdly. Like, one, an entire crowd full of people tanked up on Prosecco, dancing and singing, and like, yeah, the people around you going absolutely crazy it makes it every gig, you know. So that's, but also they've got the band on stage, like the band who are playing the music are on stage,
isn't one of the band or the person who arranged the music, part of the music for the band, is one of the Claxons?
I think so, and Little Boots as well was in it as well.
Oh really? Okay, right, yeah.
But the band are playing, and the band clearly, imagine being a musician and getting to play ABBA's best hits for 2 hours. Like, the band were having an amazing time. And in a way, those humans on stage made it, because you could see the joy of the musicians. It wasn't just this. So again, I think the ABBA Voyage worked. It's really well done. And I don't think just a big screen with avatars on is necessarily brilliant, unless you think through those kind of things. And you fill everyone with Prosecco, which is another important part. But yeah, I'd love to see AC/DC, because I haven't seen them live, you know, and I probably might have missed my chance. I don't know if they're doing any more gigs, but I think that's going to be a thing, like judging who's got the pent-up demand in the audience.
There you go. Kiss. Not coming to a town near you soon. They're sending their virtual version. As we're veering back into music tech, should we do there's a couple more AI-related stories to bring you. This one, well, the first, this is a new AI model. Stable Audio 2.0 is the latest AI music model. What is it? Why is it interesting?
Yeah, it's not a super inspiring name, is it? Stable Audio.
No.
I mean, this is a company called Stability AI, and they're one of like the big names in AI technology. Like they make AIs to create images and video, and then since September last year, music. They've got a musical AI, and you can say, make me, you know, a drum and bass song with this, that, you know, the idea. And it just got updated. So before it could do like 90-second clips of music that would kind of just go, you know, like getting the middle bit of a song. But now it can do up to 3 minutes with a proper, it says, intro, middle, and outro. So like a proper, it's learnt compositional structure was the phrase they use. So it can make a proper song rather than just a clip of music. And you can also make music with it by uploading your own audio files. You can say, right, as a starter for what you're going to make me, I want you to use this audio. Which, when I saw that in the press release, I was like, oh, this is going to be, like, people are going to be fighting about this. Because, you know, can you upload a new Beyonce album and say, right, make me some country, you know, classics? And the company said, no, it's going to be scanning all the uploads to detect copyrighted music. So you won't be able to upload something made by a real band or a real artist. But that the fun thing here, I think, is I can bet there's probably a skunk team within Universal Music Group who'll be like trying to break that and saying, right, what if we speed up, you know, our biggest artists? And what if we speed up Drake and upload him? Will it do something based on that? What if we slow it down? What if we, you know, just upload the vocals? So I think the minute you start allowing people to upload music to an AI generator, you're going to have these questions about, well, can I put copyrighted music on there myself? But they say it's good. And the other good thing about this is that they trained it the right way. They didn't train it on music without permission. They actually went to a production library last year and they licensed their catalogue of music. And they said the artists who made it were given a choice to opt out and say, I don't want to have my music as part of this. So they have done it the right way. So hopefully, but yeah, this is one of like, if you're interested in AI music, what it is, like listeners, like Stable Audio is one of the ones you can go and have a play with and see what comes out and see what you think of it. So it's one of the big
And just out of interest, does AI doesn't improve on something on music, does it? Does it just replicate it? Otherwise, I mean, once again, we come back to the price of music in-house bands and what we can do. And if we were shocking musicians, would AI turn us into better musicians or just send us back music which was equally shocking?
I think so. There's a can I say this on the podcast? There's a phrase, shit in, shit out, which is, you know, if what you put in has no merit at all, you can't say sort this out. But you might have made a short clip in the studio and you want to kind of expand it, or you want to see. So, I mean, in a way, a lot of the exciting thing about these AIs for me, I think, is if you're a musician, like if you're the kind of musician who loves messing about with a synth, or messing about with a guitar pedal till you get a weird sound, like that musical experimentalism thing where you're like, I'm noodling and I'm figuring out and something might come out of it because I'm a creative person. In a way, that's what this sort of thing can be for you. Like, it's just another kind of thing to noodle with. But yeah, I don't think it's going to turn us into stars.
Never mind. But anyone can be a star overnight now. Well, I say overnight. I'm not sure how long it's taken him. But here's a story which I'd missed and Stuart brought to us as an example of someone who's using AI to build a market for themselves. Have you heard of Glorb, everyone? Glorb is an artist who appears to be using AI to make the characters from SpongeBob SquarePants rap about drugs and guns. And he's got something like 1 million monthly listeners, this fella, this guy Glob, the mysterious, sorry, Glob, Glorb, should have picked a better name. We don't know who Glorb is, but this is classic AI, where it's now recreating the age of the novelty record.
Well, that's it. And this is why it is mysterious. We don't know who they are. I don't know who he or she is or what they're using. But there was a story, and I think it was CNBC in the States, and they were saying, like, this global, they're using AI to so what's, we don't even know if it, are they using AI just to get their voices from SpongeBob SquarePants to say stuff they hadn't been recorded saying, or are they using AI to create the music? But yeah, it's making these kind of trap and rap tunes where, yeah, I mean, they're quite, it's kind of the SpongeBob characters letting rip at each other in a gangster style. And yeah, nearly a million listens on Spotify, more than 640,000 subscribers on YouTube. Mm. And I wrote a story about it the other day, and then literally 2 days later, I heard it coming out of my niece's phone, completely really? I hadn't mentioned it. So I think the people who are playing this, it is teenagers, you know, who are kind of gravitating towards it.
Yeah. How are they getting away? How is Glorb getting away with this, though? Surely there'll be a cease and desist from the makers of SpongeBob SquarePants.
I mean, it wouldn't be surprising. It's one I've been trying to get my head around the legal issues, actually, because, like, is making SpongeBob rap stuff that's not brand friendly, is that illegal? Like, I'm not entirely sure. The characters' likenesses are being used in the artwork and the videos. Is that something they can kind of do a cease and desist for? Mm. But then you could argue it's a parody, and that does have some protections in some parts of the world, you know.
Right.
But in the past, you know, like Weird Al Yankovic can make songs as a parody of artists, but they share the writing credits because he's, you know, he did that song Fat, Michael Jackson's song, and Michael Jackson gets a writing credit on that.
Right.
So we've had that sort of issue in music before. But in this case, where the music is original, the lyrics are original, the voices, we're not sure how they're making them.
Mm.
So I think we will find out if Nickelodeon can find out who Glorb is.
Yeah.
Because at the moment they're kind of, but it's weird. I know there was a thing a few years ago though. I don't know if you've watched much Peppa Pig in your time.
I mean, for about a year, it was very popular with our daughter. Yeah.
Well, someone a few years ago made a thing, and it's called, I think it's called MLG Peppa Pig. And it's someone doing Peppa Pig and making Peppa Pig say things that Peppa Pig wouldn't say, and drug references, gun references. It was very similar. And that's still all up on YouTube. So they obviously didn't get sued off the internet. So I wonder what will happen with Glorb. But I suspect if there is development, it will come quite quickly. Because if you're the SpongeBob SquarePants owner, you're going, what? Hang on a minute.
Yeah. Absolutely. Just time, I think, to get one more story in, which what should we finish with? Or should we, there's a couple of other big stories around. One is about, this comes back to the old spat between Universal Music and TikTok, with the independent labels coming out in support of their major colleagues at Universal. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So it's just the fight with UMG and TikTok continues. What do we predict? We predicted when it would be done by. I think we might be past that now, mightn't we?
Oh, yeah, miles past. I think we said it'd be all over by Christmas. No, we gave it about 3 weeks, and then we said it would be by the end of March, was it? Or end of March or end of February, whenever it was when the publishing the Universal Publishing songs would come down. There was, because when that agreement ran out, and that was the point, I think you said they'll probably get it done by now, but still no movement.
So, I mean, they haven't been shouting at each other in the press in the last month, so maybe they're talking, but yeah, it's still going. But yeah, so I mean, the interesting part of that argument was TikTok saying Universal Music was being a big bully, essentially. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but biggest music company trying to bully us over licensing. And so this announcement last week undermined that, because it's a body called Impala, which, for listeners who don't know it, it's the European independent body, isn't it? And they do a lot of the stuff in Brussels, lobbying on behalf of the independent labels. And the reason that's so interesting is, like, normally Impala is not Universal's mate. Like, if Universal Music Group tries to buy someone, Impala's the one shouting, saying, this is too much consolidation. Regulators, look at this. Like, it's got a history of fighting back against the majors consolidating and buying up loads of companies. So it's not a natural bedfellow for Universal. But yeah, it came out and said it'd been talking to its members, all the independent labels, and they agree with Universal. They want TikTok to value music fairly. And the other thing it said was they want the same terms for indie labels with TikTok as the majors get. And that sounded like a position of, like, okay, if Universal gets TikTok to kind of give it some good terms now, indies want to benefit from those too. So they're kind of saying, we support them, but we want to also get whatever they win. And TikTok put a statement out that began, "We value the relationships and licensing agreements we have the independent music community across Europe." So TikTok was sort of just being much less fighty with Impala than it was with Universal, because I think TikTok knows it doesn't want to be seen as like having a go at independent labels. But yeah, I mean, it's good news for Universal, because it can say now, look, it's not just us, it's independent supporters too. And so it's another step along the road to, I think, more pressure on TikTok to bow towards what Universal wants it to do, I guess.
Do you think because it has gone quiet, there is some movement behind the scenes, and they've both decided that they would talk in private rather than have this slanging match in public?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've not heard anything like any rumours about them talking, but so it could just be they both thought, hang on a minute, that went a bit, that accelerated quickly in internet parlance. So it might be they just rode back from sharing each other. But yeah, I mean, we've talked about, haven't we, like how big an impact has for other labels, not just Universal. And like, no, literally everyone is losing at the moment from this dispute, like artists, fans. Universal has talked about how it's affecting TikTok. So, you know, I hope they are. I mean, quiet doesn't always mean talks, but both sides will want to reach a settlement rather than have this continue. So yeah, you never know.
And that'll just about do it for this edition. And I know what you're thinking, Stuart. You're thinking, how would AI end this show? And apparently it would end it like this. Thank you for joining us on this journey through the corridors of the music industry's financial landscape. Remember, the melody of success is composed not just of talents, but also of savvy financial decisions. Until next time, keep listening, keep learning, and keep making beautiful music. And that, quite frankly, is enough of that from the actual humans who brought you this. Thank you very much for listening. If you have enjoyed the show, please do subscribe to us in your podcast app and give us a review and a rating, and tell your friends who are in bands that they should be listening, or just drop it into conversation with friends at gigs or down the pub. We'd very much appreciate it. And if you have a question you'd like answered on the show, you can email us at Stuart.
theprice of music podcast@gmail.com.
We'll have another all question episode actually coming up for you very shortly. But in the meantime, thanks again, everybody. Look after yourselves. Cheerio.